Are you happy? What is happiness exactly? Is it true what Abraham Lincoln is said to have said, that we're just about as happy as we decide we want to be? Is happiness that simple? And what is the World Happiness Report, and what's in the 2024 edition? We're going to tackle those questions with two psychology professors at Michigan State University. That's Bill Chopic and Rich Lucas. And let me welcome you both to the program. Rich, hello.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Bill, great to see you.
Hey, thanks so much for having us.
Bill, I'll stay with you. Tell me a little bit about your background and what attracted you to MSU in the first place.
Yeah, so we run the Close Relationships Lab. We study how relationships and the people in them change over time, across lifespan. But more importantly, we're interested in how people can leverage the relationships to be happier and healthier. And, you know, I've been at Michigan State almost 9 years now, and I was always struck by its reputation, its concern, and its kind of just dedication to answering some of life's really, really important questions in a really rigorous way. And, you know, sometimes you'll look at the landscape and World Happiness Report, and you'll see all these really salacious findings that, you know, people want to take away and kind of how to live a happier life. And, you know, as psychologists, we're kind of interested in cutting through the chaff and getting to the kind of the really important stuff that could maybe guide people's decisions.
And what goes on in the Close Relationships Lab? What's sort of your mission?
Our mission is basically to try to figure out the key contributors to kind of successful relationships. So sometimes that involves looking at large existing data sets. Sometimes that has people come into the lab and trying to teach them how to fight constructively and what are some of the ingredients or personality characteristics with successful relationships. So we study friendships, we study marriages, we study parent-child relationships, we study friends, and yeah, it's been a lot of fun the last couple of years.
All those things that impact our happiness. And Rich, again, tell me a little bit about your background and the Personality and Well-Being Lab.
Sure, yeah. So I'm a personality psychologist, and what that means is we study basic processes that people have in the way that they interact with the world, interact with other people. We usually think about personality as these characteristics that are relatively stable over time. And so a lot of what we do in our lab is really think about what are those factors that make people stable? How do those things that are internal to a person affect the way that they interact with the world? Can we change those things? How do they develop over the course of the lifespan? And then what I do in particular is look at a lot of those personality factors in the way that they are related to happiness. And so we also study how stable is happiness over time? How does it change? How does it change in reaction to major life events? How does it change in reaction to the things that are happening in your partners, relationship partners? And so we do a lot of different things related to that link between those things internal to us and the happiness that people report.
It strikes me as we've been talking, it seems like happiness in one way is so simple yet so complex. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I wish it was really, really simple. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, it's really baffled people for long periods of time. And it's a goal that people seek out. You know, they want to be happy and they do all sorts of things to try to be happy. And gosh, it's just so hard and it eludes us. And even on paper, if you have all the ingredients that say you should be happy, you might not necessarily, you know, be so. And historically, it's been a struggle to identify kind of the key things, especially for individual people. You know, a lot of times people say, I do this to try to be happy. But then, you know, part of it is, you know, what goes through people's minds when we ask them, hey, are you relatively satisfied with your life? And, you know, are there relatively big things? Or is there some inertia that kind of keeps you in an emotional state over time? And all of these things are kind of contributing to whether or not you answer the simple question, if you're happy, yes or no. And it's way more complicated than my mom thinks, at least. So
I agree. I mean, I think that when we talk about this to other people, sometimes people think, well, why are you studying happiness? This is like this kind of ephemeral thing that we can't ever measure. And then other people think, well, this is the most important thing in our lives that we're striving for. And so, of course, we need to study it. And of course, we should devote resources to studying it. And of course, we should use the best scientific methods to study it. And I think that contradiction there, I think, represents, you know, the challenge of studying happiness. It is this thing that everybody has a sense of, everybody understands. But then when we really try to drill down and figure out how we can study it scientifically, we realize there's a whole host of really very complex issues that come up that make it quite a challenge.
I mentioned to you both that I still remember what a humanities prof told me in a class here many years ago, that happiness is the one thing that's not a means to another end. It's sort of the ultimate end. Do you concur, and what are your thoughts?
I think happiness does this. The pursuit of happiness certainly drives us to try to achieve so many things. And Yeah, I agree. You know, if you told me when I was 10, like, oh, if you were happy in life, I'd be like, well, that means you won. That's kind of what you're after. That's, you know, you don't need to become a lawyer or a Supreme Court justice to do that. You just lucked out and you were happy. And yeah, I agree. It's kind of this final, but admittedly, as Rich said, ephemeral state. It's like this kind of thing. It's hard to kind of grasp our hands around. You know, happiness might wax and wane over time. So it's also kind of something that needs to be maintained and contributed, you know, kind of built up over time. And that's what makes it so difficult, too. So, yeah, it's this thing that everyone's striving for. It's hard to get to. The people who have it, we aren't always sure what distinguishes them from other people who aren't happy. And that's what the huge challenge is.
Yeah, and I think one way to think about it is, or one way I talk about it a lot, is if when we think about parents and their kids and, you know, to predict the future for their kids and what they want for their kids, some of them might have some ideas, okay, I want this person to be a doctor or I want them to do well at school or these sorts of things. But you can obviously give them these hypothetical situations that might contradict that. They might, instead of becoming a doctor, they, you know, become a lawyer or whatever it is. And they don't necessarily can't necessarily predict what that outcome for that person is, for that their children are. But they all, if you really kind of get down to it, what they want is for their children to be happy. And I think that a lot of times that's what they'll say. I just want my child to be happy in the future. And I don't know exactly how that's going to play out, but I want them to be happy. And I think that that's kind of captures some of the idea of happiness itself, that we know that there are many different ways we could get there. But if we get that end state of being satisfied with our life, being happy with our life, then we feel like we're a success in some way.
And you've both been touching on it, but what are some of the factors that determine our happiness?
Yeah, it's actually surprisingly hard to kind of nail down the essential ingredients. I think we know certain types of things. So I think that, you know, it seems like having strong relationships tend to be associated with happiness. People who have a lot of strong relationships that they find satisfying tend to be happier than people who don't. You know, I think that a lot of really obvious things matter too. So there's a big debate about whether money matters for happiness. I actually think that the research is pretty clear that it does have an effect. It might not be the only factor, and I think that sometimes people might exaggerate the importance of it, but I think it's pretty clear that money is associated with happiness. Health conditions seem to be associated with happiness as well. So sometimes when we do these studies, even though there's big debates about these things, it ultimately comes down to a lot of these intuitive factors do actually turn out to matter for how happy we are.
Yeah, those are the big couple ones. And I would just caution listeners from being too caught up in what seemingly are cutesy little, you know, manipulations or interventions you can do. Oh, just flip this one switch in your mind and then all the barriers to your life will be gone tomorrow. You know, that's not really how a lot of kind of psychological well-being and happiness stuff works. And, you know, it's really, really deliberative. Changes are really slow. Improvements are really modest when kind of these changes in people's lives happen. So, yeah, it's the really, really big ones. But there's a whole cottage industry and a lot of researchers dedicating their lives to figuring out, well, you know, maybe there's some stuff we could do to make us happy. At least we know those really big things matter. But then the challenge is, you know, what can you tell a person who is a little bit sicker or doesn't have as many resources or, you know, doesn't have as many social relationships? You know, what do you tell that person to kind of help them become happier? And that very simple question is hundreds of people are trying to work on.
It's really not as easy as Abraham Lincoln says, then, is it? That just you decide I'm going to be happy today, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and I think one of the challenges is that we have these big things that we think matter. The effects aren't huge for any of those. So if you don't have one of those, it's, you know, you're not doomed to unhappiness. But they do matter. And I think that to the extent that we can, you know, be healthy and kind of deal with those types of things, get social relationships, I think that those matter. And then I think that one of the other things we're starting to realize, I think, is that perhaps the path to happiness is actually pretty idiosyncratic. And so I think that maybe what research on happiness has to offer people are a bunch of suggestions about the things that they could pursue that might make them happy. And it might not be the thing that makes Bill happy might not be the same thing that makes me happy. But if we have a set of ideas about things that people could pursue and they could try them out and see which works for them, and maybe it takes a long time for them to actually be able to implement that in their lives, hopefully that's what I think a realistic goal for happiness research to provide for people.
So, gentlemen, what is the World Happiness Report? What's in the 2024 edition? And I think you want to say, yeah, there's some good information, but it's not the be-all, end-all, right?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting initiative. I think that we are, over the past decade or so, I think that lots of people have devoted, lots of organizations have devoted their time to getting better information about the happiness of lots of different people all throughout the world. So I think that there are more surveys from nationally representative samples from people all over the world that we can start to use to compare countries on their levels of happiness, to look at time trends in happiness, to look at age differences in happiness, to start to get a better sense about whether the factors that matter for happiness are the same across the world or whether they vary across cultures. And I think that the goal of this happiness report is to report findings from that year after year to see whether there are any interesting time trends. So one of the most famous parts of it is the ranking. So each country gets ranked in their happiness, and it's a big deal if countries drop in their happiness ranking or go up in their happiness ranking. And, you know, and I think that sometimes the ranking, a change in ranking doesn't mean a very big change in happiness, but it's interesting to pay attention to see whether there's something we can think about that has changed within a country that might lead to a decline in their happiness over time. Policymakers might be interested in that, say, okay, what are we doing that we might want to improve? And so I think that the goal of this World Happiness Report in general is to try to highlight some of those issues. And then each year they target specific issues that they tend to focus on that might be particularly salient that year or just something different that they haven't highlighted before.
My colleague Jack Harrison is here and has a question.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, I mean, are there regional differences? Are there specific continents that are more happy than other ones? If you could elaborate on that.
Yeah, I think that one of the big things that comes out is Scandinavian countries are always at the very top of the ranking. So it's Denmark is this year, I think, and Finland, all these types of countries. And, you know, and people do wonder what it is about those countries that keep them very much at the top. You know, and then I think that there are other characteristics. So high income countries tend to do better than lower income countries. But then there are some other regions that tend to do better than average. So I think that a lot of Latin American countries tend to be slightly better than what some of their demographic characteristics and income would predict. So there are certain types of regional differences like that that get highlighted, some of which correspond to the characteristics of those regions, income, health, these types of things. And some of them seem to be slightly different than what those objective features could actually tap into.
What about, Bill, this thought of the difference between usefulness and happiness? We've talked about who cares if you're happy? Are you having an impact, a positive impact on other people's lives? Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that is rooted when you kind of ask people to give an evaluative assessment of how well their life is going. So, you know, as a kind of country leaders are naturally curious, so they'll be asked, how is the economic standing of the country? How is the social standing? And then, are your citizens happy? And then at least part of the happiness might be derived from a sense of purpose, that they kind of go about each day seeking out something or being productive. And some of those even have roots to Sigmund Freud, and the ideas have kind of been around a lot. But yeah, well-being researchers will distinguish between different types of well-being. So usefulness is a sense of like you're contributing to society. Although there's tons of days that I feel really useful, but I'm not necessarily the happiest I've ever been. But you know, they're certainly related, and you can see why. Like if you're, say, employed or you're dedicated your life to service or you're active in the community, there's a sense in which I'm doing something that'll maybe benefit either the world or my family or the community. And that makes us feel good, partially because we're kind of this connected species and we want to do right by each other.
You know, when we talk to policymakers about this issue of, you know, should we be doing things to try to make people happy, I think that there is one form of skepticism that comes up, that they say that, oh, well, that's this superficial thing, that people can get happiness just by watching TV. And so if we want to encourage people to be happy, we're just going to have them watching TV or, you know, doing things that aren't super productive. And I think that Bill's point about these different ways that you can be happy and these different factors that contribute to happiness, I think are really important, because when we talk about that, when we use that word happiness, sometimes we're not being precise enough. And there really is multiple meanings of happiness. Some of it is just positive emotions at the, you know, in the moment. We experience joy or we experience, you know, an emotion, happiness. And it is possible that maybe we don't want people to be happy in that way, that joyful way, every moment of their day. They need to be anxious so they get motivated to do things. They need to be sad about things that are terrible in the world around us. And if we didn't have that reaction, we might not have productive responses. But I think that Bill's point about kind of meaning and purpose and these sorts of things is that sometimes we might do something that reduces our negative emotions, but we feel as productive, as meaningful. And then we have a sense that I'm living my life right, that my life is going the way that I want to, despite the fact that I might not be happy every every moment. And I think it's that broader form of happiness that I think that we're often really focused on as happiness researchers. Do we feel that my life is going well, that it's something that I think is a good life? And if I evaluate it that way, then I'm happy in that way. And then I think that the connection between, you know, usefulness and happiness, I think, is much clearer.
For the record, I want people to be happy. I'm on the record. I've been here. It's official. You've heard it here. But there is a sense in which, you know, all of the emotions in people's lives are useful and functional. So, you know, you being afraid of things kind of protects you from danger. You being anxious about things makes you pay attention to it and to kind of maybe alleviate that. And, you know, the positive emotion does feel great. And again, people should feel happy. But if you ask, say, a parent of a 3-month-year-old, are you exuberantly feeling all the positive emotions in your life right now? And they'll probably say no. But there's a sense in which they made a decision to have a child because they thought that they could really impact a person's life, that their parenting could release this person out into the world to also do good. And the World Happiness Report is really great because it gets us talking about these issues and, you know, what are some countries doing right and what are some countries struggling with? And, you know, the more kind of introspective we are about these processes might actually kind of help us get closer to it someday.
Yeah, and I'm just curious, are there different levels of happiness or sort of different stages, or do you sort of look at it short term versus long term?
Yeah, you know, we do all those things. And yeah, so sometimes they'll do kind of mood manipulations where we'll kind of do, those are kind of the smaller tricks you can maybe do on a daily basis to make you feel better in the moment. But, you know, a lot of these large longitudinal studies are funded by a lot of country governments because of the same stuff we've talked about. They're naturally interested in the well-being of their population. And those unfold over really, really long periods of time. And, you know, some of Rich's greatest work, it's all great, but some of the greatest work is kind of tracking how people's happiness changes before and after life events happen. And that kind of speaks to the stuff you're really interested in. Like, would marrying this person make me happy? Would having a child make me happy? Will I be finally happy when I can retire? And those are kind of the long-term questions. You're going to have to follow people for 30 years to figure out if something made them happy someday. But then, yeah, there's also micro ones where I'll ask, are you happy now? Are you happy now? Every day for 2 weeks to figure out, you know, maybe some days your happiness changes and maybe it depends on stuff that's happening to you that day. So, yeah, there's different timescales or just different contributors. And again, it's all about this question, what makes people happy?
Yeah, and I think that sometimes those different ways of thinking about happiness and measuring happiness actually do different things. So I think that there's some research, for instance, on unemployment. Like, unemployment is generally something that people don't like and they feel bad and it affects their happiness. And so when we do these long-term studies where we follow people for many years and look at what happens to their happiness after they experience unemployment, life satisfaction goes down and sometimes it doesn't come back up even after they get reemployed. But there are some studies that actually show that that doesn't happen with the momentary emotions that they're experiencing. In fact, sometimes people, when they're unemployed, actually have more positive emotions while they're unemployed because they don't have all the stressors of work. They're at home and, you know, they're not having these things. So even though their life satisfaction might be declining and kind of there might be this long-term hit on their life satisfaction, on a moment-to-moment basis, they actually don't get the stressors and some of those types of things that people who are actually in their job dealing with those unpleasant things happen. So sometimes those different ways of thinking about happiness, those different levels of analysis actually can move in different directions in response to different things that are happening in people's lives.
And yeah, and one thing I've always kind of been struck with in the literature is that, you know, people are resilient in some ways. You know, when terrible things happen to them or really transformative thing happens, there is an adaptation for a lot of things that happen. So you getting married is a good example where, you know, the wedding day is this amazing day full of optimism, but it also is just one day and you've likely been dating this person for a while and life kind of goes back to normal. But there are a few things that kind of leave this indelible print on us that we never quite get over. But, you know, one thing with that research has always been struck by is that, you know, you're in the darkest depths when something happens, but there is this kind of recovery that happens. So that's why I say kind of for better or for worse, happiness can be pretty stable across the lifespan. And it's for better or for worse. And I mean that.
I remember reading once, I don't know if it's true, related to Jack's question about countries and stuff. What about ages? I thought I read once where people in their 50s and 60s tend to be the happiest, or is that a gross generalization? Kind of because they've been through maybe the tougher parts of life?
Yeah, I think that there's still some debate about this. I think that the story has been, I think that, you know, young people are happy. I mean, you know, 20-year-olds are happy, and then it declines throughout your life until you're about 40 and that you hit the low point. And then you start to kind of go back up to 50s and 60s and you recover there in terms of happiness. And I think that that finding is pretty consistent across a lot of different studies. But I think that there are some reasons to suspect that that might change. And I think that actually one of the things that the World Happiness Report has tried to highlight this year is in relation to age differences and where some of the benefits that younger people, 20-year-olds, have might be reduced right now in what we're seeing. And so I think that there are some of those age-related changes that we've observed and kind of taken for granted that this is the pattern that we should find. I think some of those things might be changing over time.
Yeah, and you know, it just there is this nadir kind of in middle age that's really heavily advertised, and you can kind of understand why. Work is very hard. You're struggling to find yourself in the world. You're struggling to build a future, and then the ages also come along with them all the stuff that happens. So you're maybe having children for the first time. You're getting married. You're experiencing professional setbacks. Your parents are getting older. Like, there's all these stressors and exciting things that are happening, and to think that you'd be always happy in every moment is a little unrealistic, but. So there's a bunch of reasons why kind of that late life increase happens. So you kind of settle into your situations a little bit more. You get a routine. You start to plan a little bit for the future. But part of the debate, which Rich mentioned, is that, yeah, there is this U shape where it's a little bit lower in middle age and then higher when you're young and higher when you're older. But then it really does obscure all the different wild ways that people change in between. So not everybody experiences that massive dip. Some people are really stable. Some people never get happier after that nadir. So, you know, part of people who are interested in personality, I think we're fascinated by, you know, why do people buck this trend? Or, you know, this average U-shape doesn't really characterize any one person. It's more of a collection of a bunch of people changing in different ways. And then that's part of the exciting thing is, why did this person get deliriously happy? What happened to them? What did they do right that we can learn from? And that's where some of the mystery comes in.
So, you know, Michigan State offers so many opportunities for undergraduate, graduate students to research. I know both of you have students in your lab. So just for maybe students who might want to get involved with you, or even alumni who sort of want to follow future research efforts you have going on, sort of what's the best way for people to connect?
So we have a lab website that has kind of a whole collection of all of our research papers, what we're working on. And yeah, to the students and alumni out there, we're always interested in kind of what makes people happy, what makes people healthy, what makes people lead better relationships. So we have students interested in becoming therapists someday, work in the lab. We have people who, you know, want to get experience in data science. We have a few people interested in pet psychology, if you could have animal-assisted therapy. So we're doing a lot of different – I view that as a relationship, too. Your relationship with Rover is a very important relationship. Yeah. If you're broadly interested in trying to enhance human standing and human happiness, you know, the Department of Psychology is a natural place for that. And I feel like our labs complement each other well in the sense that we're kind of interested and guided by those same goals to make people happy and healthy.
Yep. Yeah. And I would just reiterate the people who are interested taking a look at the website, the psych department's done a really good job kind of highlighting not only our work, but other people in the department who do things that are related to this. And so I think looking at those, kind of drilling down, looking at the individual websites of the different labs, the different people that are involved in the psychology department. And I think most people have a lot of really good information about the work that they're doing, but also, yeah, the opportunities. We have links for opportunities for graduate students who might be interested, links for undergraduates who might be interested, pretty broad overviews, accessible overviews of the major findings that we've had over the past years, links to papers, those sorts of things. So it's always a good resource to follow up on some of those things from those websites.
Well, Rich and Bill, thank you so much for telling us all about happiness today. And let me tell people right away, if you want to learn more about Rich's, it's the Personality and Well-Being Lab that you want to Google. And for Bill, it's the Close Relationships Lab. And we've been talking with Bill Chopik and Rich Lucas, who are psychology professors at Michigan State University, about happiness today. Bill, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Rich, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And for Jack Harrison, I'm Russ White. This is MSU Today.